What's up, you guys? Sean Ross Sapp. This is Fightful.com. This is FightfulSelect.com. And this is the Retro Review. As you know, we do them a little bit differently here and there. We'll cover events. We might cover certain wrestlers. We might cover a certain run. And today, we're going to cover a certain run. That run being the Undertaker's streak. At least his undefeated streak up until it was broken. And this was requested by our dude, Zachary. Zach, how you doing?
I'm doing good, Sean. I'm in Arizona now, where last time we did one of these, I was in Arkansas.
Nice.
Yeah, wife is doing college while I'm over here being a wrestling nerd, so it is all good.
Story of my life. Well, we're going to talk about The Undertaker's WrestleMania streak. Obviously, we're going to spend a little bit more time on some than others. And The Undertaker had this amazing 21-0 streak before it was broken by Brock Lesnar. It started off just 4 months after he debuted, and it was against Jimmy Snuka. And this was only a 4-minute, 20-second match in L.A. at WrestleMania 7. It was a squash match. Jimmy Snuka got in a couple headbutts, but it was just a squash match. To me, the most memorable part of this was the tombstone. Undertaker's tombstone looked amazing here. But did anything stick out to you?
Couple things. Before the match overall, yeah, it was a short one, but no one was expecting Undertaker to become, especially in 91, that he was going to, or was this 92?
It was 91.
No one was expecting that we would be going into 2014 when the streak, I think, finally broke, saying, hey, Undertaker's going to have this long, very long storyline. The match was good for as short as it was. I did not see 90s Undertaker because I was very young. So seeing him in this match, it's he moved different, a lot more smooth than what he does now. But that's just because of age. I'm sure if he was 90s today, he would have been even better than what he was then. The only thing about this match I have to say is I think when Snuka did the jump, I think it was supposed to turn into a pile driver, but Undertaker missed the catch. And everyone has a different opinion on who announces. I think Howie Fink had the best announcement of Undertaker.
Howard
Fink. I know a lot of people.
He was amazing.
Mm-hmm.
And
I know some people say Justin Gabriel was. I go for the Fink.
Or you mean Justin Roberts. Justin Gabriel was a member of the Nexus.
Roberts, sorry. Sorry. But,
yeah, to me, this was an appropriate kickoff to the streak because Jimmy Snuka was a legend. It was followed the next year at a dome show. Jake the Snake Roberts got beat by Undertaker in about 6.5 minutes. This had some juice behind it. This had some story behind it because Jake Roberts had tried to attack Miss Elizabeth and all this stuff, and they ended up, and Undertaker and Jake Roberts ended up having a match. And Jake Roberts, again, another established legend in WWF at the time. But, I mean, we weren't getting the 20-minute matches that we would later get out of Undertaker. Instead, it was him just beating these people. Did you, when you went back and watched, considering that you were not a fan of wrestling back then, were you surprised to see how some of these played out so quickly?
Yes, but I can understand why. And I also think I had to change my mindset watching these old matches. I can't go into these thinking I'm going to watch like Adam Cole and Ricochet go at it and expect a phenomenal match. Wrestling back in the 90s, well, in the 90s was way different than what we have now. It was nice. I tried to watch as much as I could, get as much intel on each match beforehand. That way I kind of knew the story that the commentators were giving. When it comes to this match, it was good. The only problem I had was Jake's – I feel kind of like Alex with how sour I'm going. The only problem I had was that Roberts hit a DDT and did not go for the pin. He just stood there. I, from what I hear you say, when the shoulders are on the mat, you go for the pin.
Yeah. You should always go for the pin when the shoulders are on the mat. It really frustrates me when that doesn't happen. But as you said – Pretty good, but it was a little bit short. Now, the next 3 years, I thought WWF did themselves a real disservice. For like 3 years, we weren't in position to see an Undertaker tombstone at WrestleMania. That's because 93, they brought in Giant Gonzalez, and Undertaker has said on The Last Ride one of the reasons he left WCW was so he didn't have to work with Giant Gonzalez when they were there. In 94, The Undertaker had been killed off. And in 95, King Kong Bundy, who was a member of the Million Dollar Corporation, faced Undertaker. Now, Undertaker won both of these matches by disqualification over Giant Gonzalez, because they were just building to a... They were building then for a SummerSlam match or whatever the hell it was. And then the King Kong Bundy thing emerged from the fake Undertaker, because Undertaker had been feuding with the Million Dollar Corporation as they had brought in a fake Undertaker. Neither of these were good matches. They were both just like, ugh. They didn't do the Undertaker any favors here. But the whole mentality back then was, well, the Undertaker's got to face somebody bigger than him. He's got to face somebody larger than him to make it an underdog battle. But to me, it just resulted in bad matches. What did you think of this stretch?
Okay, so starting with good Giant Gonzalez, very big guy.
Yeah, yeah.
I was expecting something different, but Giant Gonzalez just wasn't doing it for me. Also, that suit that he had to wear was just odd. I would say, though, this is one of those few instances where you see Undertaker fight from below, where most of the time he's almost always dominant on who he fights.
Yeah.
I did not like the finish of this match, nor did I think that this match was good. It sounds like it was a 90s WWE booked into a corner.
Yep.
Next year, King Kong Bundy.
It was 2 years later. He actually didn't wrestle in 94 at WrestleMania, because they killed him off while he took some time off. And yeah, and that's what led to the fake Undertaker versus real Undertaker. And Ted DiBiase had brought in the fake Undertaker. So over the next several months, he would feud with other members of that stable, King Kong Bundy being one of them. So 94 was a rare instance where Undertaker missed a WrestleMania.
Didn't know that. I do remember the Undertaker versus Undertaker match only because one of my friends had the Undertaker DVD match collection.
Yeah.
And that one match was on there, and I was just confused watching it the entire time. King Kong Bundy was okay. I didn't find it to be extremely bad, but I knew there wasn't going to get much. I was wondering if he was going to get him up for a tombstone. Turns out he didn't. I think he finished that one with a chokeslam.
Yeah, and
he finished with a clothesline.
He didn't get either one of them with a tombstone. Gonzalez only wrestled like 8 or 9 matches during his whole time with WWF, at least on TV. And Undertaker would go on to finally beat him at SummerSlam. I thought it was a waste of him, but I'll tell you what I didn't think was a waste of him. The Diesel match. Back then, 96, Arrowhead Pond, Anaheim, California. Diesel was about 4 months removed from being a one-year-long champion. And I liked Diesel. I liked him a lot. But this was the first, like, long Undertaker match we got. And this was a major match. Like, this was... And the Ultimate Warrior came back that night. You had Roddy Piper there that night. Shawn Michaels and Bret Hart. But I loved Undertaker versus Diesel. It was a big man match that I hadn't seen before. Because King Kong Bundy, Giant Gonzalez, it's weird to think that Diesel, Kevin Nash, was so much more mobile than all those guys. And he was. I thought this was pretty solid. It was humbling to see The Undertaker get jackknife powerbombed, a guy his size. And I really liked how it played out, but you weren't a fan of wrestling at that time. How did you view this match?
So I knew about Kevin Nash because I watched wrestling a little bit, and then he came back and did that one sledgehammer ladder match with Triple H.
It's humbling to see somebody who wasn't aware of like what some of these guys were back then, too, because Diesel was a big deal back then.
Yeah, I watched all the NWO documentaries, yeah. the Monday Night War, and yeah, when you see that and you see how big Diesel was, it's surprising. So that must means that at this point they trusted Undertaker a lot and was starting to move him up where he's before where he is now. The only thing with this match is it was another instance of get the finish, don't go for the cover.
Yeah.
Because he jackknifed him twice, and he did not cover him.
It's frustrating.
It is, but I also kind of didn't like the promo that they did before this as well. I thought Diesel was just being way too cool.
And he was on his way collected. Out. That's why.
Oh, was this right before he went to WCW? Okay,
this is 2 months before NWO.
Okay, nice.
He was finishing up with the company. The next month, he'd put over Shawn Michaels, and he'd be gone. But he was on his way out, so he was doing some jobs. He was losing to Brett. He was losing to Taker. He was losing to Shawn Michaels. But to me, it's like, man, Diesel had been so dominant for the year prior and had that jackknife powerbomb. But like you said, that's what I didn't like, was going for the finish, hitting the finish, and not going for the pin. That's very frustrating to me. But to me, this was two mammoths. It was a little bit of a dream match for me because I hadn't seen them.
Where were you at when, how old were you when all these matches were going on?
I was born in 85, so I was 10 years old right here, and I was obsessed with wrestling, everything wrestling back then, and to see Diesel, and I had no idea he was on his way out, and most people didn't because there was no internet prevalent like now, but I would have to wait until the next night on Monday Night Raw and see like the still images, or hope that one of my friends ordered the pay-per-view and would tell me about it at school the next day. Like that's where it was. I didn't have internet for 3 or 4 more years, but... that was also the case the next year. Undertaker defeated Sid for the WWF Championship. Now, Undertaker had held the championship before, briefly in late 91 when he feuded with Hulk Hogan. But it was a couple days. The reign wasn't really what it was. And he had spent the last 6.5 years slaying monsters. That's what Undertaker was. He would fight Mankind or the fake Undertaker or Mabel or Yokozuna or Giant Gonzalez, or King Kong Bundy. He was facing a monster in Psycho Sid, but this was a little bit different. This was a WrestleMania main event. I didn't like the match, I'll say that much. It did not need to be 21 minutes. 12 or 13 would have sufficed. Do you know the popular rumor about this match?
I do not know the popular rumor about this match. What was it?
And I gotta say, I have not confirmed this. I have not asked either man. The popular rumor is that Sid shit his pants during this match.
Nice. I hope you can confirm that one day. That'd be awesome.
Oh, I've tried. Imagine, just hypothetically, Sid shit his pants and Undertaker having to tombstone him afterwards.
Oh, God, that would suck. One thing I felt bad about this match is it followed one of the greatest wrestling matches ever.
Yeah.
That being Bret Hart and Stone Cold Steve Austin for the submission match.
Yeah.
That had to be massive pressure for these two to follow it. And I honestly don't think there was any way they could have delivered that one match.
They had a match in between. They had a match in between those two matches. But it was that Chicago street fight where everybody beat the crap out of each other and threw each other through barricades and tables and all this stuff. Whoever planned out this card did not do Undertaker and Psycho Sid any favors. And Undertaker was, even though he was the champion, more people were focused on Steve Austin, Bret Hart, Shawn Michaels during that time. And Undertaker was almost like he was like the fourth guy there. And he ended up going back to what made him, which was slaying monsters. 98. He's facing Kane. Now, this one, rich in story. And I
love this one.
Yeah, I actually rewatched this 2 times because I rewatched WrestleMania 14 for a retro review. The story of this started in May of 97 and continued until March 98 when they first had a match. I didn't think the match was like unbelievable, but the moments made this. The face-off. The throwing into the table, all that stuff. Like, this was a moment, and a little bit long, but a moment that has stood forever. That Undertaker-Kane face-off has been unbelievable, and it stuck with us. What did you think about this one?
I liked how Kane not selling, normally when someone doesn't sell, it looks bad, but I think Kane not selling certain things did service to Kane. It made Kane look good in this match. I was really digging it. And commentary putting over how Undertaker's having a hard time getting Kane down made me feel like Kane could be one to just demolish Undertaker. demolish this dark entity that WWE has created over time. It was good. I loved it. I loved everything about the match.
Yeah, to me, like when you've got those images, those visuals that just stick around forever, I will always forget Undertaker coming face to face with his brother Kane in their first match. And little did I know, ironically, Kane played the fake Diesel a couple years before. He played Isaac Yankem. He had done all these things. He had encountered Undertaker, but I didn't know that. I was seeing Kane and Undertaker for the first time. And they followed this up the month after with an Inferno match. So the moments kept going. And I don't think that this needed knockdown, drag out, 5-star, 10 out of 10 matches. It needed those moments. It needed those cool things to happen. Because these are characters. And The Undertaker had, as I had said, was slaying monsters for years. And this was the biggest monster that he ever faced and ever would face. And it's because it was his brother. It was his mirror image, so to speak. He did the chokeslam. He did the tombstone. He did all that. So I thought this was great. The next year, not so much. Big Boss Man, WrestleMania 15.
This Hell match did not fly today, I'm just saying.
Share your thoughts, please.
Hell in a Cells, always loved them. First one I saw was actually Undertaker versus Randy Orton at Armageddon, I think 2004. Did not know about the Cell before that. Did not know about Mankind getting thrown off by Undertaker.
Yeah.
Didn't know any of that. So I thought this match was really, really cool. The Ministry of Darkness, I when I heard this, I had to go look a little more into it. I actually liked it that Undertaker had a stable.
Yeah.
I don't know how you felt about it, but it was cool seeing him do this and him toying with McMahon and Stephanie and all that. Although him crucifying people, yeah, no.
It wouldn't fly
today.
No,
that's not going to go today.
Absolutely not.
Also, hanging Big Boss Man from the cell would not go today.
Exactly. So, first off, this match sucked. It went about 10 minutes, but it was a Hell in a Cell, and they were just doing Hell in a Cells to do them at this point. And they're like, oh, Undertaker threw Mick Foley off, so let's have him. The stable was mainly jobbers. It was Midian, who was Phineas Godwin. It was Viscera, who was Mabel. And it had the Brood, Edge, Christian, Gangrel, who ended up leaving. And it had Bradshaw and Farouk, who were not what they became yet. This match was, and then they also booked it abruptly. The booking was just rough, because they would eventually, they would join with Vince McMahon within a month of this. Like, they were doing the higher power thing. So they go to hang Boss Man, and they spin him around. I don't know if it made the WWE Network broadcast, but they spin around, and you can see that he's hooked. It's like not hanging, it's a hook. So everybody could see that he wasn't getting hung. But I gotta say, I don't know how familiar you are with Boss Man's 1999. Big Boss Man's 1999 is worth a show of its own. In 1 year, he got hung, he cooked a wrestler's dog, and he disrupted Big Show's dad's funeral and drug the casket across a graveyard. Like, his like 9-month run was just one of the weirdest, craziest things, period.
I never heard of Big Boss Man before I went back and watched this match.
That's amazing. Now, that's amazing, because he was one of those characters that played out really well and adapted with the times. And fortunately, Undertaker's WrestleMania matches adapted with the times. He did not have one in 2000. He was facing an injury. He came back in May of 2000 as the American Badass. But in 2001, then we start to see the Undertaker WrestleMania matches. At the Reliant Astrodome, Undertaker beats Triple H in 18 minutes and 40, I think it's 18 minutes, 17 seconds. We get to see Undertaker doing what Undertaker should do. Having great matches atop the card, near top the card, with other main eventers. Big Boss Man was not a main eventer. Kane was being established, so that's cool. Really, the 96, 97, 98 run was his best to this point. But this really started off Undertaker as a WrestleMania big attraction in big matches. How'd you feel about this match?
I loved it. I thought Triple H being the opponent was good, especially since I remember him getting injured around this time, and he was away for a long time. Didn't he, like, tear his quad or something?
Yes.
Around this time?
Yes.
And then
he tore it right after this.
And then he comes back, and he's good. Oh, he tore it after this match. Yeah. That's unfortunate. I thought it was before this match.
Nope.
I thought it was cool Motorhead came out and sang for him. Sucks that the lead singer passed away, unfortunately. Loved Motorhead. I did not know that Undertaker went to Limp Bizkit for music.
Yeah.
That blew my mind seeing
He had Kid Rock before that, too. He came out to Kid Rock's American Badass, and then he switched to Limp Bizkit's Rollin'.
Whatever works for him. I liked seeing a new Undertaker because I never knew Biker Taker. I've only known Dead Man and the one stint at last year's WrestleMania. This was cool. I liked it. It allowed Undertaker to do some things different. It allowed him to show more character. I liked it. And I think if he didn't do this, I think the character would have just finally gotten boring for as mystical as he is. That's my opinion.
I think you're right. To me, this was a necessary change.
Also, this was the first mention of a streak by Ross.
Yes. Because
at this point, he said Undertaker was 8-0. Granted, I don't think they had any plans to make the streak phenomenal yet. I just think the booking always had to go in Undertaker's favor, and is why it went so long with him out losing. But after this one, I think is when it truly started saying, hey, we can do something here with how long he's gone undefeated.
Yeah, and I think that the fact that he was undefeated at WrestleMania and nobody had really noticed it by then, it also shows his value to the company. It's like, because every year on that biggest show, they're like, we got to have this guy win. We got to have this guy win. And all but, like, the Jimmy Snuka thing, which, I mean, here's the thing. If I'm a wrestling fan and I'm watching him face Jimmy Snuka, I'm still probably cheering for him because he's a cool new character. 2002, Sky Dome in Toronto, Undertaker defeated Ric Flair. Now, Ric Flair had been out of the ring. Ric Flair had effectively been retired at this point, and he was goaded back into this match by The Undertaker, who had adopted, he wasn't necessarily American Badass, he was Big Evil. And he would go beat up Ric Flair's son at OVW or wherever the hell he was at and just try to nag him back into wrestling. Now, after the last Nitro, Ric Flair had one match, and it was against Vince McMahon in a street fight at the Royal Rumble. Undertaker wanted to face Ric Flair at WrestleMania and finally got him to do it in a no-DQ match. And for what this was, I really enjoyed it because it was two complete legends beating the brakes off of each other. Ric Flair doing everything he could to put over Undertaker. What'd you think of this one?
I agree. The promo video really sold the match for me. Seeing all the stuff that was going on, it was good storytelling. WWE can do good storytelling. I just don't know why they do so much bad storytelling lately. Maybe it's just because people want to say yes to Vince. I don't know. I feel like someone does need to say no to him sooner or later. Granted, probably ends with their career.
People try. People try. They do. But it just doesn't matter because what he says eventually goes.
And unfortunately, it's starting to leak over in NXT little bit, in my opinion.
Looks like it.
I feel like Flair bladed himself during this match. And whenever they blade, it takes a little bit away from me. Because I didn't see a reason for Flair to bleed in this. He could have been fine without it. Flair does generic Flair. I love it. I never saw 90s Flair before this match. So he looked like he was in pretty decent shape for his age.
He was. And about 10 months before this, or it was a year before this, he was so embarrassed of what shape he was in, he wrestled that last match on Nitro in a t-shirt. And that was not Ric Flair, man. He got in shape for this. And Undertaker and Ric Flair had both talked about how Ric Flair was doubting himself. And that happened a lot with Ric Flair. He doubted his abilities, it seemed like about once a decade. And this helped bring him back and led to the final six-year run of Ric Flair.
Yeah, cause I agree. Because a couple years later, he was in Evolution with Triple H. And I remember watching the Stone Cold podcast and Ric Flair said around this time he really wasn't feeling any motivation for anything. And I believe also at the same time they were doing this storyline, didn't Ric Flair technically have, like, ownership of WWE?
Yes.
At some point?
Yes.
So I was okay with it. I thought it was cool that Anderson came out and did a good spinebuster too.
Yes.
It was cool to get one of the four horsemen involved. The only thing I thought was maybe they did a botch on the last ride near the end, yeah. But I can't tell.
Arn Anderson told me that he was not cleared for physical contact during that or any spinebuster he's ever done. He wasn't supposed to do any of them.
Oh, no.
Well, I wish they wouldn't have done the WrestleMania 19 match. Boy, I loved this pay-per-view. It was a great pay-per-view, but it was supposed to be Undertaker and Nathan Jones against A-Train and Big Show. To me, it would have been better if it was just Undertaker versus Big Show. But this match was not good. It went 9.5 minutes. Nathan Jones, who you've probably seen in a few movies since then, came out. He was green as goose shit. He was not good. They were trying to give him the rub from the Undertaker. And to me, they wasted an Undertaker match. Undertaker ended up winning.
Technically, Undertaker should have been disqualified because Fink announced it as a 2-on-1, and then Jones kicks A-Train.
Yeah.
That's a DQ.
Hit him with a big spin.
Just saying.
Kick. Yeah.
I thought it made – the only thing I'll take away from it is it did make Undertaker look powerful, taking on two, as Sean Ross Sapp would say, sirloin sons of bitches.
Yeah, sirloin big sons of bitches.
Yep. A-Train, which I did not realize until now, was – what was his run before he started working at the PC?
Oh, he had a lot. He had Prince Albert.
Tenzai, I think, was the one I knew.
He had Sweet Tea, Lord Tenzai, Albert, A-Train – yeah. He's always been the same guy. Well, not really. They didn't refer to him as Albert when he was Tenzai, but the crowd did. The crowd chanted Albert at him.
Unfortunately, this was like the speed bump before the line of all the really, really good matches. But after that, each one I felt like after this match just got better and better and better. And it would also be the last time we see Biker Taker. And then they would go into a phenomenal story with Kane.
So that November, Undertaker got buried, literally, and came back. In 2004 was kind of funny because Undertaker had about 4 months of hair growth here. So it wasn't the long hair. He was more like a cowboy than anything. And he came back. He did not appear on TV before returning against Kane. I would not say this was the greatest match of all time, but it was another one of those moment situations. They had a couple of sloppy spots here, but this was to get Undertaker back in the fold as the Dead Man, and really one of his most successful runs. This is not anywhere near the top 10 for me of his WrestleMania matches, but to me it was a necessity to get him back to the Undertaker of old.
So this was my first Undertaker match.
Okay.
That I saw. And we talked about this one before because we did 20, because this one's 20.
Yeah.
This was my first knowing of the Undertaker and then the streak, which was at 11 at this time. This is when you start seeing the signs in the crowd, and that's when you really start knowing that they got something special. I thought of it as a good squash match to bring back the Dead Man. That's how I look at it. It was needed to make him established as the Dead Man again, and I liked it. It worked well.
Well, the next year, as you had mentioned, you saw the signs and all that stuff. This was the first year that somebody said, I'm going to beat the streak. I'm going to take down The Undertaker, and it was Randy Orton. Now, Randy Orton had been the legend killer for about maybe 8-9 months before he turned babyface. And that babyface run was not working. So this was to establish Randy Orton as a heel again. He hit an RKO on Stacy Keibler. He was doing all kinds of crazy stuff. And this is where they started to say, the streak, the streak. And it became what it was. I really liked this match. Randy Orton losing to Undertaker didn't hurt him a damn bit. But him challenging the Undertaker for the streak, I love it. It added an attraction to the WrestleMania slate.
I think this is the start of when you think of WrestleMania, here's what you think of. You think of the card.
There you go.
You think of the main event. And then you think, who is Undertaker going to wrestle this year? That is what I thought. And that's what I went into every WrestleMania. I cared about two matches. The main event, said card, end of it, and the Undertaker match. Yeah. And it seems like at this point in Undertaker's career, if you were trusted to fight him at WrestleMania, it means the company really respected you at that point. Because that's a big deal, knowing where the streak went. And I didn't see Orton winning it. I saw no point where it was. And yeah, it was a good match. I liked it. I liked it that Orton went heel. I did not like his face run. And I think because of his attitude, that's what stopped his championship reign from that year. Because yeah, it flopped. It could have been good.
Yeah. And to me, up until this point, this was one of the best Undertaker WrestleMania matches. Like, to me, up until this point, it was like Triple H, Diesel, Orton. Well, WrestleMania in 2006, WrestleMania 22, wasn't a great match, but in retrospect, it's like, okay, Mark Henry, he's a legend, he's a Hall of Famer, he became a world champion. They wanted Mark Henry to be a big, big star right then, and him getting hurt is what prevented it. However, I am glad that they did at least one casket match at a WrestleMania, because that is the Undertaker's match. Undertaker won this. I don't have a problem with it, but it does stick out like a sore thumb a little bit when you see Triple H, Ric Flair, Kane, Randy Orton, Batista, Edge, Michaels, Triple H, Punk, and then right in the middle is Mark Henry. Not because Mark Henry wasn't worthy of it, just because at the time Mark Henry wasn't on the level of those guys when he faced The Undertaker.
Yeah, I agree. It was an odd one. It's like they took a weird left turn out of nowhere. I look back at it now, knowing Mark Henry's career, I'm fine with it. But here's where I think the casket match should have gone. I think it should have gone for Shawn Michaels, too. Okay. That would have been good. That would have been a good way to end the career if that's truly what they were going to do when Shawn Michaels was retiring.
But I don't think they could have had like the visual of Shawn Michaels ending. It would have just been, well, he's in a casket and sent away. I think they wanted a more emotional send-off for that. But I am happy to unemotionally send off this Mark Henry match because it was not good at all.
Hey, I'm surprised he got him up for a tombstone. I did not think he was going to pick Mark Henry. That was a big boy.
Because like I was saying, 10 years before that, they weren't doing him any favors. He couldn't get King Kong Bundy or Giant Gonzalez up. But he got up Albert, A-Train, and Mark Henry. Well, then after this, getting into Undertaker not only is in an attraction of a match, but he's in maybe the best match of WrestleMania every single year. Batista and Undertaker had chips on their shoulders. Now, Undertaker won the 2007 Royal Rumble and challenged Batista. And to me, it's like, okay, that should be the main event of WrestleMania. But it wasn't. It was the fourth match on the pay-per-view. Shawn Michaels and John Cena main evented WrestleMania. And Undertaker and Batista went out in 15 minutes and had an absolute barn burner of a match. And a lot of people did not think it was going to be good. A lot of people didn't have belief in Batista to have a great match or a great match with another big man. But he did it here. This match ruled.
I agree. I'm a huge Cena fan, and this was in the middle when Cena was probably at one of his highest peaks, so it's understandable that he is at the top of the card with Michaels. But this is one of those rare instances where I was like, Batista versus Undertaker should finish the show.
Undertaker won the Rumble. To me, the winner of a Rumble, whether it's men or women's at this point, they deserve the WrestleMania main event.
I agree. Those should be the last two matches of the night. Yeah. My problem is that maybe just because I haven't seen many Batista matches since then or don't remember him, it felt like Batista all he had was punches and a few other things in his repertoire.
Yeah.
Granted, the storytelling for this match was great, and I overlooked it for that. But if it wasn't a good match, that would have really put a bad taste in my mouth on it.
Well, this one, it was just the right amount of time, too. I've talked about some going too long. This one was the right amount of time. Batista did not need to be in a 25-minute match, but Edge did. And the next year, again for the heavyweight championship, Undertaker defeated Edge, and Jesus, was this good. And this was the main event of WrestleMania. This was the main event of WrestleMania, get this, over Mayweather versus Big Show, over Orton versus Cena versus Triple H, and over Shawn Michaels versus Ric Flair.
That it was is, worthy of it, too.
And that's the thing, because all three of those matches were good. The Cena-Orton-Triple H match could have went longer. Mayweather and Big Show delivered very, very well. Shawn Michaels and Ric Flair was so emotional. So emotional. And then Undertaker and Edge went in and followed all that. WWE were like, you know what? You complained about not being the main event last year. Well, here you go. You're going to follow all this great stuff. Have fun. And then they did it. They did
Undertaker
it.
Undertaker said, hold my beer.
And then he ended up winning with the Hell's Gate, which I figured he'd win with a tombstone or something like that. This, to me, I was like, this is going to be the best Undertaker match that I ever see. I could not have fathomed that they actually got better after this because this was so awesome.
I thought this was the first opponent that actually could break the streak. When I saw that second spear, I was like, oh, it's over. And then I saw him grab the arm. I was like, oh, shit,
yes.
It's going to happen. That was one thing I liked about Hell's Gate, but when did he start using it? I could not find when he started using Hell's Gate.
I feel like he started to use it in the year before this, because this was another way of them establishing that move. And to me, it's okay. It's okay. I think he should have just used a triangle choke. A go-go plata is the actual name for Hell's Gate, the technical name. And you never see him pulled off an MMA, like a couple times. But usually if you're anything above an amateur, you're not going to get caught with that. And I don't like the submission because it's too hard to apply and too easy to get out of. But for Undertaker, he wanted to make it work here, and it worked for him in the main event of WrestleMania. So the thing is, we've seen him finish WrestleMania matches by rolling somebody in a casket, tombstoning them, choke slamming them, hitting Hell's Gate on them, even getting like other guys getting DQ'd. We've seen a little bit of everything, but this, and after I saw this, I was like, man, this is when I'm like, okay, who's Undertaker going to face at WrestleMania? Because I want to watch the match, not just I want to see who he faces.
I agree. I'd like to add two things about this match before it goes there. Well, one thing overall for every match. The crowd helps these matches. I've seen every WrestleMania from 20 up to this point. So I remember a lot of these matches you talked about.
Yeah.
But what I don't remember is the crowd being as hyped as they were for these Taker matches. The crowds were loving it, especially when a kickout happened. You could just tell that they were like, oh my God, this is amazing, because they didn't know if it was going to end or not. And then another thing, I want to give credit to Charles for that sprint to the ring near the end, because boy, was he hauling ass, and I could not help but give him credit there. That was awesome.
Yeah, that is one of the all-time great sprints.
Well, yeah. I've noticed Charles does that a lot in his career. He's the ref who comes in to replace the guy who gets knocked out.
Yes. Yes. Oh, man. This was so good.
I'm so glad to talk about this next match. This next one's got me excited.
So the next 2 years, actually, he's facing Shawn Michaels under different circumstances. Now, here's a fun fact. In 2009, he was originally supposed to face Kevin Thorne, who was in ECW. As we film this, I did an interview with him, and it released. He had played Mordecai. Mordecai was supposed to face The Undertaker at WrestleMania in 2005, but he ended up getting fired before that. Years later, they brought him back as Kevin Thorne. They were supposed to face each other at this WrestleMania. What happened was Kevin Thorne filmed a bunch of vignettes, and they gave them to a guy named Hade Vanson. Hade Vanson never made his official WWF or WWE debut because Vince McMahon saw him and was like, ah, he's too little. And they never ran with it. So instead, they pivoted to Shawn Michaels. Now, Kevin Thorne had said, you know what? I stubbornly quit after this, and I really shouldn't have. Because it's like, once you see these Shawn Michaels matches, it's like, how are you going to be upset?
No, it was a great pivot. That was a phenomenal pivot.
The 09 match, WrestleMania 25, might be the best WWE match I have ever seen in my entire life.
It is one of the best. Believe it or not, it is not my favorite one of the streak. Mine is Triple H 2. I thought that one just had everything together, in my opinion. This match was so good. Storytelling was good. They sold everything. It made me miss watching Shawn Michaels watching this again, because he is just so phenomenally talented, where I wish we could have gotten a couple years after this. Just a couple more, but that's being greedy.
Yeah. And then, me too, seeing how good this was. And I loved the build to the next year. Usually I don't like Undertaker facing the same guy multiple years in a row. It worked for the next year. Shawn Michaels got desperate, and he wanted to face The Undertaker, and he wanted to win the Royal Rumble, but he lost the Royal Rumble in dramatic fashion, and then he came back and just goaded The Undertaker into a match. Undertaker didn't want to do it. And this year, The Undertaker said, okay, my streak versus your career. And then this match went 7 minutes less than the first one, and to me it was the right call. Because this one lived up to the hype of following WrestleMania 25, what I consider the greatest WWE match of all time. This one followed it up. It wasn't as good to me, but if I hear lots of people say that they liked it better. And I'm like, you know what? I could see it. I believe it. Unbelievable stuff.
I was actually one of those people who agreed this one was better until I went back and rewatched both. I have to go with the first one now. The first one just had a better in-ring storyline from the commentators, because Jim Ross made that match amazing. He made both these matches amazing, to be completely fair. Jim Ross has done some of the best commentating on some of the best matches you will ever see in this business. Not now, but then, yes. It saddened me to see it go, but I honestly thought Taker was truly losing this one. I did not see Shawn Michaels retiring. Yeah. He was still doing good matches. I thought this was the end of the streak. Truly thought it was happening here.
I did too. I was like, man, what are they going to do? Is he really going to retire? Because Shawn Michaels was still, as we see, at the top of his game. So for me to think, oh, well, he's going to retire, I didn't think that. And to me, I was like, man, I don't want the streak to end. Because I wanted it to be somebody young, somebody emerging, somebody like that. I was like, I don't want Shawn Michaels to end the streak, but I don't want Shawn Michaels to retire either. And my only hope was, well, does anybody really retire when they leave, when they retire from wrestling? And Shawn Michaels did for years. Oh, these were so incredible. And so were the Triple H matches. Now, I prefer the Shawn Michaels matches by far. But they had a series of matches, a no-holds-barred match and a Hell in a Cell at WrestleMania 27 and 28, the latter of which was refereed by Shawn Michaels. A couple of half-hour matches, and to me, I don't think they needed to be a half an hour. Take 5 minutes off of it, but that's the Triple H ego, I think. The funniest thing about the last one, Zach, was that they had portrayed it in 2012. This is our farewell to the Attitude Era. Look at the Attitude Era walking out the door. Here we are in 2020. Brock Lesnar was champion. Goldberg was champion. The Undertaker.
Goldberg wrestled Undertaker.
Still Undertaker was still doing stuff. Like, it was not the farewell. That's my only qualm, is that they were like, goodbye, Attitude Era. And here we are 8 years later.
They tainted it. So the first one was good. I liked it. I guess I missed the story. I thought that the story of going into it before I watched all the videos was that Triple H was getting revenge for Shawn Michaels the previous year. But no, Triple H just wanted to prove a point that he could do it all. It was a good match. What worried me is I felt like, after the end of this match, I don't know if maybe you know, was Undertaker really injured, or was that just a work, him getting taken to the back?
I'm sure he was beaten down and exhausted, but as far as I know, it was a work.
So it's probably set up for next year. the next year, to me, I actually physically injured myself watching this match, believe it or not, from really? Freaking out. So you go to the spot where you thought it all ends. The sweet chin music into the pedigree.
Yes.
When Taker kicked out of that, I was in my room with a couple friends watching this pay-per-view, and he kicked out, and I started freaking out and jumping around, and I rolled my foot over I strained a ligament in my foot that I had, and I couldn't walk on my foot for a couple days just because I was freaking out so hard for this match. But I thought...
I once fell on my face trying to dance like Grandmaster Sexay of Too Cool. A little bit different.
I think we need a video of that.
Around the same time, though, admittedly, it was a year before this. It was when Grandmaster Sexay came back on WWE TV a year before this, and I tried to do his dance move, and I fell on my face.
2,000 Fightful Select subscribers, Sean Ross Sapp does dance. We got it.
Ah.
There we go. Hell in a Cell seemed like a good way to end it. Me, personally, I think this should have been the last streak match. I think Undertaker could have retired here on that ramp, and it would have solidified his career. He did not need to do any more because this is when he started taking just a year off to start doing these WrestleMania matches. To me, this was perfect. To me, it felt like a very, very long storytelling. Bringing Michaels in seemed very good. I liked him as the referee. I liked everything that this match had to offer. Time-wise, I agree. Could have gone a little shorter. Our man Charles had run in again. Fortunately, eat a choke slam. Sold it great. But I think the moment on the ramp, I wish we could just remember that and it not get tainted from Saudi Arabia.
Boy, I agree with you.
And then we have the one-off child match.
CM Punk 2013. CM Punk would be gone from WWE 8 months later. He would never.
This would be his last WrestleMania match.
His last WrestleMania match, probably ever. The build to this.
I don't see him
come. Yeah, I don't either. The build to this, very interesting. Punk would, at the request of WWE, bring up the recently deceased Paul Bearer, mock him, and I was like, ugh, I don't like that. I don't like that at all. The match itself, unbelievable. Awesome match. Again, so The Undertaker is, at this point, riding, gosh, like 7 straight unbelievable WrestleMania matches. Epic WrestleMania matches. CM Punk was the one that I thought, he was the first one that I thought was like, okay, maybe he'll beat the streak. Because he was, I think, 34 at the time, and you know, the age of wrestlers was getting a little bit older. I figured, oh, he's got another 7-8 years in him. He didn't. He had about 7 or 8 months left in him. And he did not win this match. They had the Paul Heyman integration here. Punk would take a little bit of time off after this. Your thoughts?
We didn't need Paul Heyman in this at all. We didn't need the urn gimmick. We didn't need any of that. They could have built this match. Not knowing that Punk was going out the door, this was probably one of Punk's best times in the company. He was super over. He just got off that massive title reign that The Rock stopped because they had to have the title for Cena Rock 2, which didn't need to happen anyways. Honestly, I would have been fine if the title was here still on Punk and Taker took it off or Punk retained. And if Punk had won this, it would have been good. But now knowing that he was leaving 8 months later, I'm okay with him not winning this match.
Me too. Me too. 2020 hindsight, it's good that The Undertaker won this. I do wonder if Punk had won this, if he would have been so fed up, though. If he would have been so frustrated.
I don't know. WWE was not booking him well near the end.
Well, I know, but, I mean, beating The Undertaker would be booking him pretty well.
Oh, absolutely. I think he might have been staying in the company. Could you imagine the stuff we could have got with CM Punk writing? Yeah. How arrogant he would be writing? Oh, it would have been glorious.
It would have been great. It would have been a lot better than WrestleMania 30. The end of the streak. Brock Lesnar defeated The Undertaker. Here's the thing. In retrospect, I don't have as much of a problem with Brock Lesnar beating Undertaker because for 6 years, they have made him a major star. And they've gotten a lot of mileage out of Brock Lesnar. But the match absolutely sucked. The match was so bad. And Undertaker got concussed probably when he was slammed on the floor with a single leg dump takedown. It was terrible.
That's where I think he got concussed.
Undertaker doesn't remember it. He was rushed to the hospital after that. Vince McMahon leaves the event to join him at the hospital, as does Brock Lesnar, which speaks to the respect of The Undertaker an awful lot. But your thoughts when Undertaker had his streak end?
It took a piece of WrestleMania away from me, and it made WrestleMania less special. Lesnar was not the one. They could have given it to Wyatt if they were doing the Fiend gimmick now. If they had brought the Fiend in and Taker was undefeated, that would have been a perfect. I was thinking about this watching all this. Or they could have given it to Reigns, but I don't think Reigns was built properly at the time for this match. That's just my opinion. I was sad. That was a sad day. I was pissed that
many were.
Lesnar did not deserve this. I understand he was doing UFC, I think, still at the time. I did not like the part timing of it, and I do not think someone who was not working full time should have got this match. Mm-hmm. Lesnar was already a star. He was a star back in the early 2000s when he had that dominant title reign. Lesnar did not need this. This could have went to someone like, I don't know, anyone they've called up recently, and that would have just kept them higher than a kite in the air with power.
So that was the end of the streak. Paul Heyman's reaction at the end of this, I thought, helped make it. Like that, to me, that is a reaction I'll never forget. And a lot of people compare it to, I think it's when Ivan Koloff defeated Bruno Sammartino. There's no footage of it, no with audio, but people say that the same kind of hush went over the crowd. That people were like, what?
Well, everyone expected him to kick out.
Yeah. I think everybody did. We just expected it, and there was like this. It wasn't like a boo. It wasn't a cheer. It was a what? What?
And people had to compile it and compress it and process it.
And that I'll never forget that as long as I live. And that's not something that always happens at a WrestleMania or anything like that. And to me, it goes back to the 1998 WrestleMania thing. Sometimes it's about the moment. Do I wish that Undertaker versus Kane was a better match? Yeah, but the moment was there. To me, this is different because I think the Undertaker at WrestleMania deserved a better match for this too. Here's the thing. If it was going to be that bad, I would have rather Brock Lesnar squashed Undertaker. I would have much rather him just run through Undertaker and then everybody be like, oh, damn. But we got what we got, and it just, it was such a letdown. I don't hate the fact that Undertaker got beat, because he had to eventually. I just wonder, had they known that Undertaker would be around 6 years later, if they would have waited longer. Because 25 minutes, this was almost the longest match on the show. Daniel Bryan and Triple H were the only thing longer. It didn't need to be this long either. It could have been a 10-minute match, and it would have been better.
I don't know. I'm a firm believer Undertaker should have stopped a couple years ago and just let it go. He didn't have to wrestle at WrestleMania anymore. But he wanted to keep going, and that's understandable. I think the Last Ride documentary was really good to come out. It answered a lot of questions that I was wondering what was going through Undertaker's mind during all these periods of time and why he kept going.
Yeah.
But I feel like he should have went undefeated. And just retired with that. And because it's something that will truly never be replicated. I don't see them any way of naturally getting someone there.
Because people will be watching now. People will be paying attention now. They weren't paying attention the first 7 or 8 years.
No. But
after the Lesnar loss, he faced Bray Wyatt and beat him. Faced Shane McMahon and beat him. Faced Roman Reigns and beat him. He faced Roman Reigns and lost to him. Faced John Cena and beat him in a squash. Didn't wrestle at Mania 35, and then had a great Boneyard match at 36. To me, without a doubt, AJ Styles sticks out as the best. Shane McMahon was okay for the single spot, but none of those other matches did I look at and say, ah, good WrestleMania match. To me, the WrestleMania allure of Undertaker having a great match died with the streak. It ended there. And he was able to do something special because of the circumstance with AJ Styles. I think they could have had a good match and a regular match too, because I think that AJ could have made it good. But how do you feel about how they followed up the streak?
I actually took a small break in wrestling after this one. So I did not see Bray Wyatt. I did not see Roman Reigns. I did not see Shane McMahon. I did not see any of those matches. I went back and watched them out of respect to just seeing all of them. AJ Styles versus Undertaker was the first match I've seen. And I agree. AJ Styles should be the last one. I know there's that thing of if he'll come back, but AJ Styles was the perfect opponent, and because of how phenomenal he is, AJ Styles would have made this a really good match. However, I would have put Styles over if it was a regular match and not a Boneyard match.
Yeah. So that wraps up the Undertaker at WrestleMania, the Undertaker streak. I want to thank you for suggesting this one. Like, sometimes I get retro review ideas, and sometimes we got to pass on some of them. There's just not enough meat on the bone. There was plenty of meat on the bone here. Tell me, as we wrap this up, your favorite Undertaker WrestleMania memory, whether it be in retrospect or at the time.
The one where I injured my freaking foot and thought it was over. I have to go with that.
Now I'm wishing Undertaker had faced Grandmaster Sexay at WrestleMania.
Oh, jeez. That would have been interesting. I think that this was a good one because it's something different. I know you were trying to change the retro review format, so I wanted to try something with it. You've been doing all these versus, like this versus this person. I was initially thinking maybe Stone Cold Bret Hart, but I didn't know enough at the time to be able to do that. I figured with the streak, if you allowed it, because I've seen the back half of the matches, I would be able to put enough insight into it to where I can make this fairly decent. I wanted to evolve and try your new format in a way. So that's why I suggested the streak. And also, Last Ride coming out, I think this is a good time where a visit to the streak should happen.
Well, tell the people where they can follow you on social media.
I don't do Twitter too much. Social media is not something I am mainly on. Twitter.com/MDKSmidget. You'll mostly see me promote anything that comes down the Fightful pipeline.
I appreciate it so much.
Or anything NXT related, because NXT is the only thing I really watch right now. I just listen to the Fightful podcasts on Monday and Friday. And then I listen to Alex, because Alex
is great.
He scares me with these last couple ones, how angry he's getting. He needs some more root beer. We need to get him a pack of that. But I'm actually trying to get back into Twitch streaming, because for a while I was affiliated on Twitch. And if I can get that back up and running, you can follow me there at twitch.tv/PRG_smidget. And I'd probably be doing magic for the beginning, because I'm still heavy into that at the moment. That's like my other pastime other than wrestling and spending time with my wonderful wife, which is out there.
Well, guys, thank you all so much. We've got a whole bunch of retro reviews. Like, maybe you're new to Fightful Select and you're like, oh, I want to see what else there is. We got a lot of events, a lot of topics. Zach, thank you so much for joining us. Guys, until next time, we're out.